Ebola is killing thousands in West Africa, most tragically healthcare workers. Dr. Godfrey George, a superintendent of a hospital in Sierra Leone helping to lead the frontline teams to fight infectious disease, has become the fifth local doctor to die from Ebola. But in the measured and rational words of Dr. David Nabarro, who has been named the senior United Nations system coordinator for Ebola, the disease is making history, generating international cooperation on a scale perhaps not seen since the end of the Second World War when the United Nations was created. Unlike the 1940s, when international cooperation was all about global leaders controlling their expanding military might, the fight against Ebola has involved all levels of international institutions, military, social, educational, religious, and economic. A surprisingly hopeful conversation now from the man in charge of one of the most terrifying scourges since the 1918 flu pandemic.
I want to stress that in all aspects of public health, those of us in international organizations put the health issues first. Much of our work is involved in providing information and then encouraging people to follow it. I cannot say whether or not there is a particular degree to which communities were sustaining practices and therefore leading to the virus being spread. That will be discovered through historical analysis. But I went absolutely clear to you that the international public health expertise was very clear that there were ways in which death should be handled that would be safe and dignified in the case of Ebola, and this has been promoted relentlessly by international organizations.
Glad to hear it. There's lots of rhetoric in the industrialized world about how the best way to eradicate or to protect people in the industrialized world from Ebola is to redouble and focus intensive efforts on striking the disease at its source, which would mean, of course, West Africa. Do you see action behind that rhetoric?
It's very heartening to me to see that after appeals went out, particularly from the President of the United States and other international leaders, with backing from the European Union, and perhaps most significantly from the chairperson of the African Union, Dr. Dlamini Zuma, we saw a massive upsurge in the resources being pledged for the response. And by massive upsurge, I want to stress this was unprecedented, in my opinion. Within the space of 2 months, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of assistance was pledged, and we've now also got thousands of volunteers, doctors and nurses being promised. I'm glad to say that the number of beds available has doubled in amount about every month since August, and we are seeing also much safer burial practices being adopted and the beginnings of, in some places, of a slow in the spread of the outbreak.
It seems to me that you've succinctly described essentially your job in coordinating this massive and rapidly increasing effort. Is that the case?
I certainly have a role in providing strategic coordination at the request of the United Nations Secretary General. There are many different groups engaged. This is the first time I have seen virtually complete harmonization of the international support with everybody working in synergy. And that's one of the reasons why I'm confident that the outbreak will come under control quickly. I'm particularly pleased with the way in which everybody recognizes that it must be the national governments of the affected countries that are at the heart of the response. They are the sovereign powers, and I'm pleased that in each case they are adopting responses that are in line with international guidance. That makes me confident that we will see the outbreak curves starting to come down within a couple of months, and if all goes according to plan, it's a bit of fingers crossed there, we will see an end to the outbreak in 2015.
Which brings me to my last question. The political controversies here in the United States and in some areas of the industrialized world where many have described a complete overreaction and an outrage and epidemic of fear when there are just a handful of cases of Ebola that have developed for very understandable reasons because people have heroically come in contact with the sick in Liberia as part of the relief effort. Scientifically, isn't it the case, Dr. Nabarro, and I'm not suggesting that we do this, that even if a busload of sick Ebola victims landed in the United States and were sort of allowed to wander around some city, the medical infrastructure in the U.S. would almost immediately be able to deal with this, and you'd never have the situation of a complete breakdown of the medical infrastructure like you've seen in Sierra Leone and Liberia. I'm not suggesting that anything like this would happen or should happen, but we are way more prepared for this than the rhetoric would suggest in the politicians' words. Yes?
So three things on this, and thanks for the setting the scene. Diseases like this will come into the human race from the animal kingdom, often via bats, with increasing frequency. It's just a reality of the way in which our world is evolving. And so every country needs to be prepared for the possibility of outbreaks of hemorrhagic fevers due to viruses, and a health system needs to be able to deal with them and respond to them. I personally do not criticize people for reacting in particular ways based on a fear of what the disease might bring. But I do encourage everybody to read up about the virus, to come to terms with it, to talk about it in their communities, in their churches, in schools, and just to let the fear get into proportion. And that's why you doing this interview with me and the work that you're all doing in radio and in other media is super important for helping everybody to get the issues in balance. And then in due course, we will be able to respond in the appropriate way.
Dr. David Nabarro is Senior United Nations System Coordinator for the Ebola response in West Africa and around the world. Dr. Nabarro, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for the chance.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.